hysterectomy, colostomy, ileostomy, but then the pain came back.
The brain is powerful and can cause almost any symptom imaginable.
How does our life events affect our body? That's what we're going to go through today.
It terrifies me.
I can see that.
I would reject the notion that everybody with chronic pain has a psychological origin.
You're saying that if I fully express my anger, that's going to help me not have a headache?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't expect Dr. Schubner to cure me.
I call BS. It's pretty succinct, to the point.
I don't know exactly what to expect.
People have been taught to suppress emotions in general. What I'm doing in my class is helping them express rather than holding it in.
I fought my whole life.
Just tore my life apart.
I'm angry and I'm sad.
This treatment is not for everybody.
Now I'm experiencing new symptoms, and so I'm freaking out.
You're stirring things up.
My shit is so stirred up.
If you had told me a month ago that I could will my pain away, I'd have told you you were on drugs.
It is Tuesday, July the 16th. You're actually hearing this one day early, and I'm going to get into why that is here in a couple of seconds. But it's July 16th, so it is my mother's 60th birthday. So happy birthday, Mom. We had an awesome birthday party at her house the other day. So that was pretty cool for sure. So as I always do, I wanted to start off, kick off the show by giving some thank yous out to the patrons of the show. And again, as a reminder, Patreon is a place for creators. So your favorite YouTube show, your favorite podcast, your favorite musician, they're probably not doing this for a living. Podcasting, in fact, I think it takes like 200,000 or more downloads every single week before somebody could ever even start to remotely make money in podcasting. And so really, like, the cost to be able to put on this show, the time involved, publishing, equipment, all that kind of stuff, it all has associated costs to it. It very much is a hobby and it's a labor of love, but every dollar counts. So by going to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast, you can surely support the podcast as well. I have people that are donating $8 a month, people that are donating $35 a month. So it's really just a big thank you. So wanted to give a shout out to Christina, to Holly, to my man Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Alyssa, Brian, Sarah, Adrian, Stan, Kristen, Sarah, Helen, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you to everybody that puts forth some kind of a dollar contribution amount every single month to the show. Really does mean the world. And then also, another way you can support the show, if you don't feel like throwing a couple of bucks in the tip jar, is just if you're listening on an Apple device, going over to iTunes and leaving a review. It really helps be able to get the show out to more people. The more positive 5-star reviews with a written part of it, meaning write a review, the more people that this appears for in the searches. So that is my ask of you. Okay. So today, and the reason why this podcast is getting launched a day early, and actually I was going to put this out next Wednesday, but I'm putting it out this week. And the reason for it is that there is to be a email campaign going out to a big mailing list that's helping out with the Indiegogo campaign for the upcoming film, This Might Hurt. And This Might Hurt is another film essentially about TMS, chronic pain, mind-body syndrome. I've talked to Michael Galinsky from All the Rage. He did the movie on Dr. Sarno and on himself that talked to different celebrities that were cured of chronic conditions, and that was an amazing film. And this is another amazing film. I've seen the first 50 or so minutes of it, so about first 75% or so of it. But today, the interview is with the two filmmakers, so Kent Bassett and then Marianne Cunningham. come on the show and we just rap for 45 minutes or so, and we talk about the origin of the film and why they created it and what's the backstory and the working with Dr. Howard Shubner, the brilliant Dr. Howard Shubner, for this entire film, the characters and the people that are in the actual film and them being able to recover some of their stories. So really what I want you to do to take this information is, and the link to this is going to be in the show notes and the show description, but if you possibly can, if you're interested in seeing this film, the Indiegogo campaign is running, and there's actually several different tiers that you can be a part of to basically see the film and get it. So like for $20, as an example, you could get the advanced digital download of the film, telling you it's amazing. The trailer is up on the Indiegogo campaign. But then also there's other offers there. The $75 one to me seems like the best value. You get the digital download, but you also get a lot of special features, a lot more interviews, more thorough interviews with Dr. Shubner, other experts, to really be able to further enhance your knowledge. If this is stuff that really interests you, you know, I don't do this podcast for really any other reason than the topic really, it resonates with me. It fascinates me. I want to help heal the world, of course, but I just love this concept that forever the idea has been that chronic pain has been due to some kind of a structural abnormality. And now through talking to all these different experts around the world for so long, I've learned that in fact it does not. Pain originates in the brain, and pain in a lot of ways maintains in the brain, just continues firing basically. And that's really what the story of this is. All the recent neuroscience behind it, talk of neuroplasticity, being able to rewire parts of the brain, it's really pretty amazing. And for some people, that happens almost immediately. For other people, it takes a long time. And so some of these stories are very harrowing that happen in this film, and we're going to get into that as we roll onto this interview. So without further ado, thank you so much for joining me. This is, again, Kent Bassett and Marianne Cunningham. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. I am on the line, actually, with a couple of filmmakers. So Marianne Cunningham, Kent Bassett, they are working currently on a film called This Might Hurt. And I've seen quite a bit of the advance release of it, which has been awesome. But thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
So This Might Hurt. So a few months ago, I interviewed Michael Galinsky, who was one of the filmmakers for All the Rage, which was about Dr. Sarno. And I remember thinking at the end, I'm like, this better not be the last film about TMS and this kind of stuff. And then somebody sent me your trailer several months ago, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. And I reached out to Marianne, and thankfully we got this thing set up. So I'm excited to talk about kind of what got you all into this work and what it is ultimately that the listeners of this podcast can do to help to get it finally out there to the public.
Great.
Yeah, we're excited to talk about that too. And we love All the Rage and Michael. He's the best.
Yeah.
We're so excited to have worked alongside with him. His film taught us a lot.
That's awesome. I never know if it's one of those situations where like sales is what I do by trade. And, you know, you don't bring up the other guys, you don't bring up the other reps. It's like everybody's always infighting. And I don't know if that's how it works in film, but I remember I was thinking right before I called you, do I bring up Michael or not? Is there a rivalry? Is there not?
We love him.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so you're out of Brooklyn, Manhattan, I think you had said just before we hopped on the line. And I guess basically, so I watched the Indiegogo video, which I'll have links to this kind of stuff in the show notes so people can access it and things like that. But Kent, you had talked about kind of the, I guess maybe why the importance of this film is because you sort of went through a struggle like this. And so I want to hear obviously about that. And then Marianne, what's your connection to either Kent or to this genre or what? Because I only heard Kent talk about it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, it started in college. I got really bad arm pain, debilitating pain in my arms. And, you know, visited doctors, got diagnosed with tendonitis, tried lots of different treatments, and nothing worked. Eventually, I had to drop out of college because I couldn't turn a doorknob or type my papers. You know, I'd seen a bunch of doctors. I got, you know, this diagnosis of tendonitis. I couldn't type my papers. I couldn't handwrite. I couldn't turn a doorknob. So I had to drop out of college. And then sort of by chance, I discovered this book by John Sarno, The Mind-Body Prescription. And I kind of instantly recognized myself in the pages of this book and realized that the pain was not something wrong with my arms or a debilitating injury to my arms that I couldn't heal from, but that it was caused in my mind and my brain because of stress. And I was just so relieved, you know, to hear someone sort of cogently explain that. And, you know, it set me off on a journey of healing. And I had really pretty immense pain relief pretty quickly. And then the pain bounced around my body. I had, instead of arm pain, I got shoulder pain. And then I got heartburn. And I got, you know, pain moving around that I was able to, each place it would go to, I was able to talk it away and make it leave my body. And so it was a pretty astonishing experience. And it left a big imprint on my mind and my imagination. I became very curious about the mind-body connection and how I had not ever been told about it, neither by doctors nor, you know, in college and all my studying. It had never really come up before. And then I had this pretty profound experience when I was 22 that really opened up a new world.
Did you, so you talk about like basically talking it away. And I've interviewed a lot of psychologists on this particular show, ones that were direct referrals from Dr. Sarno, like our Dr. Arlene Feinblatt and Dr. Eric Sherman. And one of the assumptions that I had made early on, when I first heard about Sarno and read the book, I thought that this was just all about stress, when really like it sort of is, but stress is kind of maybe laying it a little thin. And then I had thought that it had to be somebody, you know, quote unquote, had to be somebody who had like a major type T trauma. And then as I started talking to a lot of psychotherapists in the field, it seemed like that's a pretty small minority, like maybe 20%, 30% of people that experience these kind of things had some kind of a really traumatic event as a child, you know, witnessed a, either were beaten or witnessed a lot of drug abuse, or people that were really, really high on the ACE score, on the ACE study, as an example. For you, right. was it kind of the pressures of college, or you know, what sort of bucket do you think you fall into?
You know, that's a tough question, because my opinion has changed over time. Like I said, it set me off on the journey of healing and discovery and searching. And at first, my parents had been divorced when I was a child, and that affected me a lot. And I journaled about it, and I felt some emotions. You know, I'd had some relationship issues, and I was thinking through those, and, you know, I didn't go to therapy. I just journaled and read and thought and was able to make the pain go away. And that pretty much solved my problem. But I became interested in working through any kind of more deeper, deep-seated issues that this pain was pointing to. Because I just think the mind-body connection can be so powerful and transformative. And in a way, this pain felt like a message. It's like there's more work to be done here. Not that I continue to have the pain, but I felt like it must have been too easy to just make it go away by telling the pain to go away. There must be more work to be done.
Right.
And I, it was actually when I decided to make the film, and that was the story we can tell later, but I worked with Dr. Schubiner, meaning I filmed with him, and I just became really interested in the deeper psychological issues that he often works through with his patients. And after I filmed with him, I went back and did do therapy and did discover more, you know, things that might be labeled as trauma. But they were things I had completely forgotten about and never dealt with, but was able to get rid of my pain before ever dealing with them. So, you know, was the trauma the cause of the pain or not? You know, it's almost like a mood issue. It just depends on each person and what kind of, you know, what kind of psychotherapy or what kind of healing they're interested in. And, you know, therapists and people who theorize about this will debate a lot about it. So I don't know if that answers your question, but these are some of the things I've thought about over the last 12 years as I've been thinking about these ideas.
It's interesting that you kept pursuing despite, you know, kind of having the pain stuff behind you, but then even digging a little bit deeper. I think that's, it's almost like preventative care. I feel like at that point from, you know, not having something else arise. Marion, what about you? How'd you get wrapped up into this world?
Yeah, so Kent and I had gone to the same film school, but we didn't know each other very well. And he moved to New York, where I had been since film school, and a friend introduced us because he knew Kent was making the film and knew that I had been looking for documentary work in a meaningful way. And so I started watching the footage, and I really connected with it, and I decided I wanted to hop on board. That was like back in 2013 when we had zero funding and, you know, just... It was just the two of us starting to make the film, watching through the footage, figuring out what we had, what we needed to go and get. And yeah, that's how it started.
Awesome. So that brings me to the next question, actually, is the actual time frame on working on this. So Kent had already started working on the film before you had jumped on. So this goes all the way back to at least 2013, if not a little before.
Yeah, so he filmed the class, the primary class, in 2012. And he had been sort of like doing research since probably 2011, figuring out what he would film. You know, so much of the filmmaking happens before you even press record, getting to know doctors, getting to know Dr. Schubner, and working out a relationship where we could go. He trusted Kent and he could go and film him and the class.
So that's interesting is like, you know, documentaries work different than like feature films, right? You have in a film, it's going to be, I have these characters, I have them portraying something but it just like within, you know, reality TV, as an example, the characters are the people in the show. They're the people that are going to be treated. They're the patients in this case. And so talk maybe about the screening, which actually, maybe let's back up a little bit. Talk about the premise of the movie. Like, How many people are involved? What's the whole... Because in All the Rage, it's more or less the story of Michael Galinsky and Dr. Sarno and how do they intersect. So talk to me about how this film was set up and why it was set up in the way that it was.
Yeah, so we filmed a four-week mind-body program that Dr. Schubner was doing in 2012. We followed 8 or 9 patients through the class, but 3 of them really stood out and became our main characters. So we filmed them through the class and then followed up with them over the next few years to see how their pain journeys went. So, yeah, what else? What was the first part of the question? Sorry.
That's okay. So you're basically following 8 to 9 patients that go through this process. Now, maybe because I think at the end of the 50 minutes that I saw, it said 27 minutes or 20 minutes or something still to come. One thing that struck me is that there's not really a lot of, I feel like in All the Rage, Dr. Schubner makes this remark where he says, what did he say? He said, I had diarrhea for 6 months and I just found out I was scared shitless. That was his quote in All the Rage. And there wasn't much story wasn't much backstory about Schubner and how he came to this work. There was maybe 2 or 3 minutes of it in This Might Hurt, but there wasn't a ton of it. So I guess what made you have this be very much more patient / character driven as opposed to a little bit more on the doctor and his methodology?
We have these amazing characters who let us into their homes and their lives and let us follow them. And we felt like that part of the journey was so illuminating for folks. And also part of it was because of All the Rage. You know, when Michael's film came out, I think in 2015 or 2016, it was sort of a defining moment for us because we had to make sure our film was different. And I think we had already planned on having it be more character-based. But in that moment, we sort of had to really strengthen our characters and make sure that that was the story that we were telling.
And is there like a selection process for the people that are in this? Or did it just happen to be that he does these rounds of classes, they all have 8 or 9 people, and these are the 8 or 9 that we're going to have?
Yeah, one of the incredible things about this was when I first was talking with Dr. Schubner, and he was just kind of like, I was like, I'd like to do a documentary. And he was like, okay. And he just started, you know, talking to patients and saying, you know, would you be interested in potentially participating in a documentary? And patients were interested. And so he told me he thought it could work and that he would create a class, one of his programs that would be a documentary class. And Dr. Schumer, you know, is a savvy person. He's interested in films and he would meet patients and, you know, be like, oh, I bet this person might be interesting to be in a film, you know, or he was thinking like, oh, it might be interesting to have an older person and a younger person, or it might be, you know, interested to have someone with this type of pain and or that type of pain. And so it was a real, in a sense, a collaboration in terms of figuring out, you know, an interesting group of people who were all willing to be filmed. And then getting the timing right where I was in between jobs so I could fly from Los Angeles to Detroit and film on my own dime, in my own time. And so it's kind of a miracle that it ever happened at all, as far as I'm concerned, that Howard was so open with his program and that the patients were willing to trust me and Dr. Schubner to open up in this way.
They let us film, you know, like their treatment, which is so in-depth and so personal and emotional. We follow them through the scenes, through all of that stuff, which is like an opportunity that I don't think we could have gotten anywhere else.
Yeah, and there's an interesting element to at least the way that I don't know if Dr. Schumann is doing. Does he, I guess, like, this is going to be the documentary class, but does he run this like, is this the way that it's conducted? With the particular interest I have is in the pairing of the people. The people are paired up and essentially doing that short-term psychodynamic therapy on each other, almost in pairs. Is that kind of still his style, or was this something that was more unique to a few years ago when you started filming?
That's a good question. It's probably best directed at Dr. Schumann, because he, as he says in the film, the treatment keeps evolving. So he's always looking for modalities and methods that are going to improve outcomes, and he pays careful attention to that. So for a while, he had patients doing peer-to-peer work, like you saw. I think he, as you see in the film, he added a therapist into the program. So I think at that point, it was just him working with patients and the therapist working with patients, and there was not as much peer-to-peer therapy anymore. So maybe that he does none of it now, or maybe that he sometimes does it. I'm not clear on that.
Yeah. Maybe talk a little bit about, because, you know, part of the and again, like, I'll link the Indiegogo campaign and such in the show notes, but talk a little bit about, like, what goes in. You know, this show in particular, the podcast, is... it's heavily crowdfunded through Patreon. You know, people will donate a monthly amount basically and into the publishing and into the time that's spent to be able to get it out there. And I feel like I explain it ad nauseum for, you know, 60 seconds when I start an episode. Talk about what goes into the expenses involved around getting a film finished and out there for people to actually see.
Yeah. It's years and years of hard work. So we've tried to get grants, we've tried, you know, multiple funding sources, and it's been really hard to get folks interested in this subject. We're not really sure why. I mean, I think anyone who's on the forum sort of knows that it's a struggle to get people to really see this work as important and real. But we've mostly funded this ourselves through our bank accounts. We both, for many years, worked freelance in reality TV, as I mentioned before. And so we were able to work for periods of time and then try to get off at the same time so we could, like, have a few weeks to a couple months to edit, and then we'd sort of work through our savings accounts and then go get jobs again. So it was a cycle of that for many years. But we did need outside help, too. We had to bring in an editor, graphics people. When we went to go film, we would need directors of photography, sound mixers. So it's a lot of, like, scraping together resources and favors to get your project made. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, no, it's just funny because I remember, you know, a typical budget for a documentary is like a minimum to $300,000 to $500,000. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I can get that cost way down. You know, I'll find shortcuts and I can shoot, I can edit, and ultimately I think our budget has been about $500,000. And so it simply just took us 7 years, which is just crazy. And many times we thought we were going crazy. Like, are we still working on this? Like, we're only halfway through the editing process. And, like, we're editing on nights for, like, two, and you can't edit a film for 2 hours at night or, like, 5 hours on a Saturday. You know, it's a full-time job for 6 months to a year typically, and editors aren't cheap, so we couldn't hire one. And anyway, so just to give you a sense, yeah, that's where we're at. We put in a ton of our own resources into it. We don't have savings anymore, but we really believed in it. I know I'm going to get this letter when the film's released, someone saying, like, this changed my life. You know, you helped dig me out of a hole of chronic pain, and now I'm able to return to a life I used to have. And I, as you know, you're probably very familiar with these stories from now. And so I look forward to that moment because hopefully it will make the 7 years of effort worth it.
Well, I was just about to say, I guarantee you'll get one of those and probably within just a few days of dropping that, because I know that I feel like I get those every week. And, you know, it's a part-time podcast for fun hobby kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a million other things that I do, and this is really no different than the guy that goes in the garage and cuts up wood and builds things, right? This is my equivalent of doing that. So I know that you'll certainly get some of those. And I know that, you know, Michael from All the Rage talk, it sounded very like it was stop and go on that film for years. You know, where he would kind of like, he would go a few months and then it was kind of like basically like the film had ran out of funding or ran out of content or something like that. And then finally it was almost like when his body was about to completely break, he was like, okay, we're picking up the camera and we're not stopping until it's done.
Yeah.
Which I think was so interesting. Talk about some
of
the...
It's really impressive. And, you know, the pain can be an obstacle. You know, these stories of trauma, these stories of stress that has, you know, upended people's lives, it's hard to engage with that for hours and hours each day. And so there are definitely moments where we just had to pause and take a break and, you know, come back to it later. And I'm sure Michael had to deal with some of that too, not to mention like his own pain that he was working through during the process of making the film.
Certainly. Talk about some of the, as you know, as much as you can without spoiling some of the stuff that's in the film. Maybe talk about some of the characters that are in it. You know, what I guess maybe some of the evolution of those characters, because, you know, the assumption, just like it would be with any other film, is that, okay, you have these people that kind of start on the bottom and then everybody loves a great redemption story. There has to be some of those that's in there. We don't need to know who they are or how many there are, things like that. But maybe talk about some of the things that occurred during the process of actually filming with the characters.
Yeah, I can run through our characters and you can take anything that happens. So we filmed three main characters, or three characters sort of came out in the edit as the characters we were really going to spend a lot of time with in the film. First one is Tony. He's a 17-year-old kid who has had CRPS that presents as leg pain for 5 years, since about 2 weeks after the death of his best friend when he was 12 years old. So he enters the class after seeing, I'd say, 40 to 50 doctors, spending months of his life in hospitals. Then there's Kim. Kim is a, she has fibromyalgia and abdominal spasms. She's been bedridden for 8 years, hasn't been able to work, has had 4 surgeries to alleviate the pain. And she says, you know, the surgeries would help for a while, but then the pain would always come back. She is probably the most skeptical of the treatment, but she's at the point where she'll try anything. She just is desperate for relief. And then there's Maureen, who's a writer. She's in her late 50s, and she has symptoms that present as sort of like pain and tingling in her arms and hand, in her left arm and hand. But the doctors have found a pinched nerve in her neck. So they're saying, her doctors before Dr. Schubner are saying that that's the cause of the pain. But she tried physical therapy, but she, it did not get better. And she, basically the doctors are telling her that it's either this pain forever or a really invasive neck surgery that often requires like opiates afterwards. And she wants to try this treatment before she goes through that. She also, I forgot to mention about Maureen, the pain mostly happens at night when she's sleeping. So it'll wake her up at night and then keep her up for hours on end. She has a really hard time going back to sleep. And then she's, you know, exhausted throughout the day. It's been like 2 or 3 years without a good night's sleep.
And yeah, I mean, it seemed like you were starting to ask about like what kind of changes do you see? And the changes are pretty incredible. You know, people starting off with years and years of pain, trying everything and nothing working. And then all of a sudden, one character notices that her pain moves from head and neck pain to a different part of her body, which is alarming. But then it's pointed out in the classroom, like that actually can be a sign of improvement because you now know there's nothing structurally wrong with that part of your body. If the pain has moved to a different part of your body, that's a telltale sign of mind-body symptom. And then other characters or other people around the classroom are like noticing that and being like, oh, that happened to me too. Like, okay, interesting. That's not a bad thing. That's not something I should be scared of necessarily. And like another character realizes that she can like sing a song at her symptoms when they arise and sort of like learn a kind of lighthearted attitude towards the pain, a sort of sense of like, oh, I'm not going to take this as seriously anymore, and is able to make her pain go away. So there's like, you know, moments like that of seeing transformation. And then there's also moments of encountering really dark memories, you know, that have been weighing on a character for a long time, stuff from childhood or, you know, that sort of are connected to where the pain is, that there's some like association between a sense of guilt or anger and where the pain is located in their body. And so, you know, again, that might seem like alarming or concerning, but in the process of this work and the therapy, these are signs of improvement, success, if you can sort of relate to it the right way and understand that making an emotional connection with pain is a great way to discover like, oh, this pain is not a structural problem in my stomach, for example, or in my leg, because I can tell that when I get angry, the pain is dramatically worse in a way that, you know, indicates that the mind is involved, that there's a psychological connection between the pain and the emotions.
What I'm curious on what made you go and seek Dr. Shu? I think I know the answers. This might even be a really kind of a lame ass question, but what made you go to Dr. Schubiner as being sort of the doctor subject for this, as opposed to the other doctors that have books out or talk about this stuff in the public and things like that? Because there are a few, but talk a little bit about the choice of Schubiner.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's a handful of really great doctors that follow in Dr. Sarno's footsteps, and the simple version is that I initially tried to film with Dr. Sarno himself. This was back in 2011, and he wasn't able to participate, and he recommended I talk to two of his psychotherapists that he worked closely with over many years. And one of them, Fran Anderson, was like, you know who you should go talk to is Dr. Schubiner. She was like, he's Sarno 3.0. he's adding interesting, you know, dimensions to this work. He's broadening it out and also doing really important research. And so then, you know, I gave Dr. Schubiner a call and, you know, he was very interested and we went from there.
Who?
And obviously Howard is, you know, he's an amazing researcher. He has brought so much to the field, but also he's warm and caring, and he's a great character. So it was about him as a character in the film too, because he really is one.
That's actually, so I wrote that down in my notes and something I wanted to bring up, because so one thing that strikes me when I hear, because again, like I'm involved in some of these online forums and I moderate a couple of them and communities and things like that. And when people talk about actually going to visit some of these doctors, whether it be Dr. Schechter, Dr. Hanscom, Dr. Batson, Dr. Schubiner, so like there's a ton of them that are mm-hmm. spread out throughout the states. But one thing that strikes me particularly with Dr. Schubiner is the amount of time that it sounds like he spends with a patient. You know, in the insurance medical world, we're used to going in and seeing a doctor and they'll give you 10 minutes, right? Or, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. It's it reminds me a lot in the movie Billy Madison. There's this scene in there where the school nurse is checking the kids for head lice, and it's like all of half a second that she uses that tongue stick or whatever, the depressor. And that's what it reminds me of when doctors really look at a problem. People talk about Schubiner going and they're going to see him and it's 60 minutes, it's 90 minutes, it's a long time. And that's what my doctor had spent with me when she had asked me about what's going on in your life, Eddie, which I wasn't used to. And so the other thing that really struck me was Dr. Schubiner's intake form, which is shown in the movie, people filling out the questionnaires and this, and then him reviewing them with the patients. And it's wildly different from what people listening to this are probably used to seeing in a doctor. So maybe talk about that, like, A, the intake form, and then two, just the process that Schubiner has when he gets introduced to a new patient, because it's so different from what people listening to this are probably used to.
Yeah. That's so, yeah, that it's an amazing, the intake, they're all, I'm going to start over. So Howard's intakes are 3 hours-ish, and he takes you, he asks you all the questions, he goes through your history, and they were, that's another great thing about this film is that they were really scenes. Having that time, that footage to get to know a character and to get to know their backstory and have it all in the scene was an amazing asset to the film and helps you really care about these people in an intense way very early on in the film.
Yeah, I mean, the a big part of the initial evaluation is basically going through a list of 33 symptoms, which are often mind-body related, and he's asking questions to determine, is it actually mind-body related, or is it a structural problem? Might you need surgery? You know, that kind of thing. He doesn't assume people visiting him have a mind-body disorder, and he's an internist by training, and so he does a physical examination of people. He moves their arms and their legs and the parts of their body that are in pain, and he asks them questions and gets a sense of, could it be a neurodegenerative disorder of some kind or some other issue that the mind-body treatment would not be relevant for. So he is sort of ruling out structural problems or discovering them if they're there. It's typical that the patients that go to see him do not have those because they would have been found already, but he still does his due diligence and sometimes he finds them. And then the other thing, as you mentioned, is he'll go through and talk to the people for many hours. It usually takes unwind because most people have more than one mind-body issue. They may have leg pain, but then they may have also had migraines for 3 years when they were 13. Well, why? You know, why did they have migraines? Was that a structural problem? Or, you know, and he'll ask some questions. Usually, the main question he asks is, what was going on in your life at the time that that symptom started? And sometimes it takes variations on that question 4 or 5 times before someone's like, oh my God, that was when, you know, my sibling tried to commit suicide. Oh my God, that was, you know, right before I, you know, right after I lost my job. And they had never made this connection before that like a symptom, like horrible back pain could be related to, you know, something that they try not to think about too much, you know, that they're like, oh, that's too stressful. I'm just going to bury that stress from losing a job. And then he helps make that connection for them and see that, you know, that pain can be related to an emotional event in their life. And I feel like that's the main thing he does is ask the question, what was going on in your life when that symptom first started? And I feel like so much of people's miseries could be alleviated if they had doctors who quietly, patiently investigated what was going on in people's lives when their symptoms started.
Well, and even just listening, right? I feel like maybe the last couple of units or credits, depending on what state you're in, of medical school, maybe should just be like interviewing 101, like being able to listen, actively listen, restate, probe to clarify, things like that. Because it's just not, I feel like they're normally not, like what we see Schubiner do in the film is not typical, at least with the 25 people or the 24 people that I saw before seeing the doctor that I eventually, you know, did see. And so,
right.
I feel like I've basically spoken to everybody just around Schubiner. And one in particular, was one of the people with Alan Gordon that was going to Boulder every week for the last year on the fMRI project. I think that thing is just about wrapped up. But when Schubiner at the end of the film was talking about all the research that he's been working on and all the research that is basically coming to the forefront, I thought maybe at first he was talking about the end of that study, but then just timeline wise, it didn't seem like, because that thing probably wrapped up in the last 2 or 3 months, at least the 1 year portion that I think they were doing initially. So what are maybe some of the other pieces of research that Dr. Schubiner has been working on or maybe things that might make it into the film as you kind of start wrapping up some of the, you know, some of the components of it?
Yes, you're correct that the specifics of the Boulder, Colorado study are not in the film, but the impetus to do the study is included, which is that Alan Gordon had an fMRI of a brain scan done on one patient who had abdominal pain, a teenager, before and after treatment. And the scan was pretty incredible. And when they sent that over to some scientists at Boulder, they got really interested in doing the study. And so we were able, they also write up that one case study as an article. And so we referenced that at the end of the film, which then has led to much bigger things. And yeah, the other study you mentioned that we have at the end of the film is, it's an NIH-funded study that was published in the journal Pain. And it's about fibromyalgia patients who, some of whom get the standard CBT treatment, and some of whom get this, what they call emotional acceptance. I'm forgetting the full name of it. Something like emotional accept. Anyway, it's basically an emotion-focused therapy where you're linking symptoms to emotions. And what they found was that the people who were sort of randomly assigned to the emotional expression arm, emotional acceptance and expression, I think is the name of it. The people who were randomly assigned to that arm were three times as likely to have to no longer meet the definition of fibromyalgia at the end. So basically they were kind of, it was the emotional focused therapy was shown to be more effective at really giving dramatic improvement. And then they were more equal for like minor improvements, but it was sort of an interesting example of, you know, how emotions can help end dealing with the emotions can help end chronic pain.
A thought just came to me and then it escaped. The emotional acceptance, it sounds like that's a little bit more in the realm of what Schubiner is going through in that intake form, where it's like, what was the symptom? And then tell me what was going on at that time. Like, let's say, what's a good example? Here's one that I've used on the show before. I developed this really strange, like I started having really bad, like stomach problems and like, you know, IBS like symptoms, and then just starting to be allergic and intolerant to certain foods that didn't bother me before. Like dairy was a major one in 2013. At first I thought this is just something that happens and it's out of nowhere. The particular sport that I train in, it seems like everybody was allergic to gluten and dairy at this period of time. So it was just the end thing was part of it. But the other part of it, when I really sat down and started linking symptoms to emotions when I was going through this process, was that my wife and I found out we were going to be pregnant with our first child. And inherently that is a good thing. And I love my kids a ton, right? But that inherent pressure of, well, life's about to change and you're about to get a wake up call. Were there any examples of people in the film where it wasn't like, there's the example of Tony, whose friend had passed away when he was in seventh grade, and that could have brought on some of the symptoms. At least that's what's implied during the film. But and what you had talked about earlier, but were there any where it was an example that was more like mine with the dairy thing, which wasn't the only symptom, but basically what you would think of as a really good life event on the outside might have bring on some symptoms. Are there any stories like that from filming you can recall?
Nothing springs to mind right now. I think the people who were drawn into Schubiner, I think you're totally right that that's a very typical reason people develop chronic pain. That basically, I think everyone knows, like you get a major job promotion, it's like maybe great news, but you might be really scared and terrified that you won't live up to the new standards that your promotion will require. So yeah, I think that's a typical thing that can create chronic pain for people, but or anxiety too. But in our case, most of the people, no, I can't remember an instance. I think not in the film. There were a lot of details to people's stories that didn't make it into the film, and just because there wasn't enough space in a 90-minute or an 80-minute film. But there were instances in their lives where they had some success that was very stressful in the three-hour intake with which we made a two-and-a-half-minute scene out of.
Right. Yeah, certainly. Well, I was thinking when you were talking about the editor, basically, that it's not something you just do for 5 hours on a Saturday. I remember when I took 5 years of video production from ninth grade through the end of my freshman year of college. And I remember one of the early on teachers that I had for that, and she had said, for the most basic editing, literally just cross dissolve a couple of scenes. She's like, basically think of it as like 1 minute of produced content is going to take between 1 and 2 hours of time, and how much that blew my mind. And I was thinking just for some titles and a couple of transitions and things like that. So what you guys do is a lot tougher, I think, than maybe people think. Although that the $500,000 figure to make a documentary blows my mind too. But you know, the people that have specialties in all this, like I remember just thinking about trying to create a graphic for this podcast and being like, this is going to take me so long to do, so I need to go find somebody, and then getting quotes for what it costs to produce that, like, it just blew my mind. So
it adds up. You don't really think about all of those choices and the things that you have to do and how long it takes to find people, build a team, but it really does add up, and that's why it took 7 years.
when did you wrap filming on that? What year did that wrap up in?
Well, so we filmed the class in 2012, but then we went back each year and caught up with the main three people, especially. We filmed a reunion class in 2013, and then as recently as 2017, we filmed interviews with Dr. Schubiner, trying to make better sense of his approach. And with better questions, the more time we spent with these ideas, the better questions we were able to ask. And we filmed with Tony in 2017, and got the latest with where he's at.
Is that going to make it into the film?
Yeah, that made it into the film. Yeah.
See, the 50 minutes that I saw, and then when it, you know, it says 26 minutes to go, and I think you even say at that there's going to be an update on Tony. And I think, like, you're grabbing you're pulling the people in, basically, and got to make sure you watch the rest of this. So, kudos to you on that. Okay. Well, so initially I talked about this being like a 45 minute thing. We're at 40 minutes even. And I'd love for you guys to, you know, part of this is like if I have an author on the show, we're trying to be able to have people purchase their book, right? You know, read this book that we have, or these other pieces of content that we put out. Talk about the film. Like, let's have this be the opportunity to have people go on. What are some of the different levels that people can contribute? What do they get if they make contributions to it? You know, ultimately, when can they expect a finished product if they do contribute? Things like that.
Yeah, sure. So we're running an Indiegogo campaign for the next 2.5 weeks. It would mean the world to us if your listeners took a look at our page, watched our pitch video, and considered helping us out. You know, the simplest way to join it would be to order a digital download. You'll be receiving the film and being able to watch it before anyone else does, the people who back the campaign. But as we've been talking about, films are really expensive, and for the campaign to be a success and for us to be able to finish the film, we need to raise $60,000. So any extra amount beyond the $20 for the digital download, there's an option, $75 for the digital download and special features with deleted scenes and extended interviews with Dr. Schubiner.
Yeah, I think the $75 advanced digital download and digital scenes, I think is going to be really interesting to people who are into the TMS community and into learning about this stuff. We're going to give you scenes that really take you into Schubiner's practice and some of the things that he believes and where he came from. You can also get coaching from Dr. Schubiner, or Dr. Hanscom has also donated two coaching sessions, which I think are really valuable for people who want to talk to a professional about TMS, but maybe don't have one super close to them.
Yeah, I would say especially Dr. Hanscom's coaching would be pretty incredible for anyone who's debating spine surgery. He is a spinal surgeon who has had spine surgery himself, and so he really is an expert in that realm.
You can also get Howard's book from us with the digital download of the film, and that's the book that the patients used in the class. It's been updated, but that's a really great perk that folks can do. They can also just get a thank you in our credits, which I think is pretty cool.
The digital download, so what formats, you know, sometimes, like, this is part of the horrificness, sometimes a little dramatic, of being a Apple user sometimes, is like, I can only get certain things on my iPad. So what file type is it going to come in on? How can people view it? Can they view it if they're traveling, things like that? Talk a little bit about the digital download element. I agree with you. I think if you're somebody that's interested in this space, that getting the extra interviews, getting the bonus content, getting the mention, getting the digital download, like, I don't drink coffee. My wife likes lattes, and it's the same cost as 21 lattes is what it would cost to get all that stuff. So think about it like that.
Yeah, and to answer your question about the download, it will be something you could watch on, it should be in any format, on especially an iPad, because it's going to be through Vimeo,
okay.
Which is an app you can load onto your iPad, you can play it on your laptop, you can, you know, most now, like, DVD players have an option to connect to a Vimeo account.
Smart TVs, too.
Yeah, smart TVs, so it'll be widely viewable.
Cool. Awesome. My Roku, I am almost positive, does. So, and if you use Prime Video, it sounds like it's going to be the exact same thing as that, which is pretty cool. Anything else as we kind of wrap here in the next minute or so that you want to say or you want to talk about or you want to mention that maybe we didn't touch on in the last 45 minutes?
I guess I just want to say, you know, we think the film is good. We think people are going to like it. We've gotten really warm responses from audiences we've shown rough cuts to. And so, you know, please check it out. Watch the trailer. The trailer gives you a pretty good idea of what the film's going to be like. And, you know, we would love to get your support of your listeners.
And like we said before, you know, it's been difficult to get this film out into the world. We've pitched it to streaming services, to grants, and, you know, nobody's really backed it. But lots of people have seen the film and they do think it's really good. And so we're super proud of it. But every person that contributes to our campaign helps us show the world that there is an audience out there that wants to see this film, who cares about the subject matter and wants to share it with the world. So we're super appreciative to every donation, big or small.
And I can't remember if it was said in there, but if so the campaign closes on the 24th, and if I mean, sometimes, like, this is like Kickstarter years ago, but I would contribute to like a motorcycle product, like a hip new motorcycle product. And then they didn't hit the goal. And then I basically would just never hear from them again. What I'd be interested to know is, like, you know, this campaign ends on the 24th. When can people expect to be able to watch it?
Yeah, we're going to deliver digital downloads in December of this year. And we're very confident that's going to happen. It definitely will help us get the film sooner to people. That's December at the latest. We can get the film sooner to people if we have a successful campaign. And we'll also have ways of distributing the film more widely so that we can help change this culture, which is really our main goal, is like change the culture of how medicine is practiced so that so many people don't spend years in pain. So, you know, I feel like that's the main point of having a successful campaign.
Definitely. Thank you both, Kent, Marion. I really appreciate your time. Best of luck with the rest of the campaign. And, you know, maybe we touch base after the release of the film and, you know, talk a little bit more shop about it.
Let's do it. That'd be amazing. It's great talking with you.
Cool. All right. Thank you both.
All right. Take care.